used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Canada's only radio show and podcast on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada on August 2nd, 2019. My name is Jen. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Today's show is on a topic that I've been looking forward to reporting on for years now as I awaited the completion of a new documentary by local filmmaker Gary Charbonneau, who also created the 2015 documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. Gary's new documentary is called Medical Illusion, a Healthcare Crisis. The documentary focuses on the fact that our current standard methods of research to find cures for human diseases is not working. We test on animals whose body systems are very different from ours and cannot be counted on for reproducible results in humans. 95% of drugs tested successfully in animals fail in humans. We will also hear from a local activist, retired lawyer, Pat Kendall, on her campaign to prevent St. Paul's Hospital from applying to rezone the land where their new hospital will be built by 2026. It is suspected that there will be animal testing, as they do have plans to build research towers, and currently we have confirmed at the St. Paul's Hospital right now they are doing animal testing at that facility. Stay tuned for those interviews, and we will begin with Pat Kendall.
So today we'll be speaking with a local animal rights activist and recent vegan, Patricia Kendall. Hi, Patricia. How are you?
I'm great, Jen. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
And so you are a retired municipal lawyer, and you have really been able to offer a lot to the animal rights movement with your expertise, and we really appreciate that. So let's talk about the campaign that you're working on right now.
Yeah, and so the campaign is called Rezoning for the Animals, and the ultimate goal of the campaign is to persuade Vancouver City Council to rezone the new St. Paul's Hospital land such that animal testing is not permitted in the new hospital laboratories. So I'll give a bit of background to this. So here in Vancouver, we have a couple of major hospitals, and St. Paul's is one of the big ones, and they've been at a downtown location for many decades, but they're moving to a huge open area in Vancouver that's an industrial site. So it's, I've been there, it's just a big parking lot. I know it's contaminated, it's kind of a wasteland area, but the hospital is moving there. Now, they have bought the land. I have legal documents showing they purchased the land, but they can't use the land because the zoning, which is the legal land use restrictions, the zoning says the only permitted land use right now is industrial. And of course, the hospital is not an industrial use. So the hospital needs rezoning from Vancouver City Council. That means council needs to adopt a rezoning bylaw. And rezoning is kind of a big deal in municipal law. Changing land uses often affects neighbors and even the whole community. So under the law, council cannot rezone land without hearing from the public. So here's our little window of opportunity where we can influence council such that when they go to rezone this new land for the hospital, that yes, laboratories are permitted. That's one of the requested land uses, and we want laboratories, we need laboratories, but we don't want laboratories with animal testing. So council's very, you know, council is composed of elected officials. They want to get reelected. They're very attuned to the public's opinion. So I think we have a real chance here for the public to persuade council to rezone without the use of animals in these new hospital laboratories. Now, there is there will be an official public hearing in the fall, and I had understood that the public would have 5 minutes to talk before council. I have learned that that time limit is reduced to 3 minutes, so I do not want to have this whole campaign be focused on one or two nights of public hearing with us trying to get people out with 3 minutes to talk to council if the council members are not on their phones and computers while people are talking. So the campaign has started in May and it is in full swing. It has lift off and we're going for it now.
And what has happened with the campaign since I last spoke with you on our show on June the 7th?
I'm so thrilled, Jen, to say a lot has happened. And the reason I'm so excited to say this is because I know there's animal fights we take on, and honestly, it feels from month to month and maybe year to year like nothing honestly is happening. But I'm going to say, with this campaign, a lot has happened in 8 weeks. So first, tons of people have sent emails to the city, to Vancouver City Council, opposing animal testing. And some people have been so great. Like, just to give you an example, I gave a flyer to this man at my gym. And when I saw him the next time, he said, I went home, I actually looked at your website, I listened to the whole TEDx talk. He owns his own tech company. He said, I wrote a letter on my company's letterhead and I mailed it to council in support of the campaign. Like, wow. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine, Jen? That's the sort of thing that's happening. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm so excited. The campaign has a Facebook page now, so it's under Resign for the Animals. We have a Facebook page. We've been distributing these flyers. We distributed flyers at the Vegan Night Market, which was held at the Waldorf Hotel. We distributed flyers at Main Street Car Free Days. We have so far handed out over 1,000 flyers. We got an article published in a magazine called Pet Connection, so I want to give a huge expression of appreciation to the editor, Leslie Kennedy, for giving us a 3-page spread in her most recent issue of the Pet Connection magazine.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, how great is this? Last Saturday was the Vancouver Vegan Festival, and Anna Pippas, who I know you've had on your program before, was scheduled to speak, and she nicely gave up a few minutes of her time and handed me the microphone and let me talk about the campaign to her audience. I'm so grateful to Anna for that.
Wow.
Yeah, recently the Animal Protection Party of Canada had a meeting in Vancouver, which was amazing. It's a whole other topic. But the party is endorsing the campaign, and they're even going to write a letter on Animal Protection Party of Canada letterhead and mail it to Vancouver City Council. So I'm hugely grateful to Liz White, the party leader, and Jordan, is it Reichert?
Jordan Reichert, yes, he's been on our show a few times.
Yeah, the deputy leader. So, I mean, to have the parties in support is huge. Someone you also know, Corinna Inkster, who has her own podcast called the No Bullshit Vegan Podcast, went out sort of out of her usual zone, I believe, of interviewees and interviewed me and gave me a huge opportunity to talk about the campaign in front of her audience. An animal rights group that's probably the oldest one in BC, ADAV, which stands for Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society, they are writing a letter to the mayor and council endorsing the campaign. So I want to thank Anne Berthisol, Laura Lee Shaw, and everybody else at ADAV for that. Like, can you see how this is building? Mm-hmm. Like, how great is it, right?
Yeah.
Then the Daily Hive, which is a local Vancouver online newspaper, published an article about our campaign. So I want to thank the writer Lakshmi Sadhu for getting the first press coverage of this and writing a really concise and accurate article. We held our first public event, which I named Raise a Little Hell. So we raised a little hell on July 13th, which was a Saturday afternoon, nine other animal activists showed up with me. We had signs. I talked into a microphone. It was held at Broadway and Canby, where the 99 B-line bus exits and people enter, and the Canada Line station, people exit and enter. It was a huge number of people we contacted that day. We handed out hundreds of flyers and got 200 signatures on our petitions. And lastly, I've been on the side writing legal letters to council. So, like you said, using my municipal law background, I've been writing letters, which I hand delivered to the city, 11 copies, one to the mayor and one to each of the 10 councilors. First letter said, the rezoning application submitted by the hospital was invalid. It wasn't actually submitted by the person who's the landowner. Whoops. The second letter, delivered to them, legal letter, said, oh, there's a registered covenant on title, that's a special kind of contract, that said no rezoning application until these steps toward remediation of contamination have been fulfilled, and they have not been done. So I wrote a letter to the city saying that has to be done before you can have a valid application. And I'm in the middle of finishing a third letter that I hope to deliver next week. So the city of Vancouver has so many, I'm just going to call them green policies. So seriously, it feels like the entire city of Vancouver is all about the green environment and greening and zero waste and, you know, reducing emissions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I have done a lot of research on animal testing, and oh my God, Jen, it is so not green. It is a huge source of contamination. So I'm writing to council to say, no, on the animal labs, because that will be completely contrary to all of your green policies.
Well, can we just go back to what you said a second ago? The remediation was not done, and that has to be done before they can apply. And so does that not change the timeline that you have here?
Well, you know what? The document did say, unless council waives this requirement. So I suspect now that I pointed this out, the city will actually pass a resolution waiving the requirement for these remediation steps.
Okay.
So the legal side, I'm not seeing any, maybe it'll give us time delay, but I'm not seeing any of it as being a real deal breaker. But I just want city council to know that there's somebody with real municipal law expertise who is on their case, watching everything and catching everything.
Right. Good.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those who maybe just don't know what kind of testing is allowed to go on in Canada, and I know a lot of people often tell me, I didn't think that we had much cruelty to animals going on in any of our industries, even, you know, the food industry. And so you've been doing quite a bit of research on what kind of animal testing is allowed in Canada. Can you tell us some of the things that you've discovered?
Yeah, so the first point I want to make about that is I think people sometimes don't realize this is testing on live animals. Just to be real clear about this is not testing on dead animals, right? Secondly, there's, even though there's very little information, I was able to get some information. So the last year for which statistics were available, the number of animals used in research and testing in Canada was 4.4 million. 4 million animals. And that is only animals in institutions that have to report to this agency called the Canadian Council on Animal Care. So there's actually who knows how many more animals, because they're being tested at facilities that don't report.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it said, well, you know, animals that we love, like cats and dogs, they represent less than 1% of the total. But when you do the math, less than 1% is still a lot of animals. It's still almost 6,000 cats. 6,000 cats.
Right.
11,000 dogs. 6,400 primates, like monkeys and other primates.
Mm-hmm.
And then they test on all kinds of animals. So 1 million plus birds, 842,000 fish, 19,000 pigs, 646,000 cows.
Mm-hmm.
And then they test on virtually all other types of animals. So then, of course, they're testing on guinea pigs, mice, rats, hamsters, sheep, beavers, rabbits, farmed animals, amphibians, reptiles, and octopuses. Like, no animal is sacred in this world of animal testing. So another thing I learned is, where do they get these animals from? Where do they get these 4.4 million animals from? Well, most of them are bred purposely for these experiments. So these poor animals, from the time of conception to death, have no natural life. They never have a home. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's horrible, horrible. Some animals are taken from the wild and removed from, you know, their natural environment. And then I'm not sure if this is being phased out, but in some places, even in Canada, animals are taken from pounds and shelters and used for experimentation. So people have
This does happen in Canada. Yes.
Yeah. So another thing I learned is just how cruel animal testing is, and I don't even know that words can even honestly describe it, but animals can be burned, poisoned, starved, electric shocked, brain damaged, infected with disease, be subject to amputations, etc. Like, there's no end to the cruelty that is inflicted on these animals.
Mm-hmm.
Then people might think, oh, when they're not actively being tested on, they're well cared for, though. And that turns out not to be true. So there was a report out of Ontario where some inspectors went into these labs and found that, just in general, the inspectors found neglect, incompetence, and outright abuse of these animals.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And then, of course, at the end of the experiment, the animals, they're not sent to some nice sanctuary to live out their lives or adopted into loving homes. Mm-hmm. They're killed.
That's right.
Right? They're killed. And, you know, this was just about where I almost was losing it when I was doing the research. But, you know, killing is kind of a nasty business, whether you're killing for any reason. And so some of the ways that these animals are killed, one is gassing. So pigs and poultry are sometimes lured by access to treats and rewards so that they would enter gas chambers. Sometimes they receive crushing blows to the head, electric stunning, something they call cervical dislocation, which is a nice way, maybe, of saying using someone's hands to snap the neck of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
Overdose of drugs, maceration, which is placement into a high-speed grinder, freezing of unhatched bird eggs and fish, freezing to death, and sometimes the first method of death, of attempting to kill the animal, doesn't work, so they have to do secondary method, which could include decapitation or gunshot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jen.
Yeah.
Oh, Jen.
Well, we just have to wrap up here, but I do want to give you an opportunity to let the public know what they can do in this short timeline that we have. We just have a few months left to stop the city of Vancouver from approving a zoning change requested by St. Paul's for their research lab. How do you plan to raise public awareness in an impactful way over the next few months, and how can our listeners help?
Yeah, so over the next few months, I'm going to continue writing these legal letters to council. We're going to continue distributing flyers. I'm just about to order 1,500 more flyers from Vistaprint. We're trying to get more press coverage. I'm going to be writing an op-ed piece for the Vancouver Sun. We're going to be featured in an upcoming article in BC Vegan Magazine, so thank you to Jillian Walters for that. I'm working with Patterson Outdoor Advertising to try to get a billboard at Cambie and Broadway, right in the shadow of City Hall, and trying to get a grant from Lush, the cosmetic company, to pay for that billboard. So this is some of the things that's going to be happening. And so there's five things that your listeners can do to help us. So number one is like our Facebook page, because I think the more likes we have, the more we're going to be seen as a credible organization for getting the LUSH grant.
And that Facebook page is called?
Rezoning for the Animals.
Okay.
The next, number two out of five that I would love your listeners to help us with is we're having another public event on Saturday, August 10th, which is coming up just very soon, 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Broadway and Canby, same place. This event is called Raise a Lot of Hell event. And oh my goodness, I would love people to come and join and help us hold some signs, hand out flyers, take signatures.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing people can do is please email Vancouver City Council. Even if you don't live in Vancouver, just go to the website and just click the link and just say simply, I am not in favor of animal testing at the new hospital.
Okay.
The fourth thing that people can do, I know it might sound weird, is I am so open to ideas for how to promote this campaign. So if somebody has an idea for press coverage or publicity or something, I am so open to it. Just message me. And the fifth thing that I would like your listeners to help with is you're going to be interviewing Gary Charbonneau, right?
Yes.
In the same, episode with me.
Yes.
And his film is going to be premiered hopefully before this campaign winds down.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to do a little, not a little, a big public disruption outside the theater where Gary's film is being shown. So I want to have people wearing lab coats streaked with fake blood and, you know, stuffed animals but wrapped in fake blood-soaked bandages, and I want to create, like, I want people to be going, oh, please don't hurt that animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to put on a little show.
Okay.
So if anybody has any lab coats or any medical equipment or anybody wants to participate in a bit of street theater, we'd love to have you there. And maybe this will generate enough excitement that the press, i.e. the TV stations, will come and cover it.
Great. So we just have to wrap up, but if people want to find the website again, what is that, Pat?
It's called rezoningforanimals.com.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And
thank you, Jen. I so appreciate, and the animals appreciate your show and you and your listeners and everything you do. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll have you on again soon, and we'll hope this goes well.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Today we're speaking with Vancouver filmmaker Gary Charbonneau. You may know of him from previous shows of ours in relation to his documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which resulted in quite a few instances in the courtroom, so we were reporting on that quite a bit. And now we have him on in regards to a new documentary he's made, which has not been released yet, Medical Illusion. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Well, thanks for having me, Jen. It's always a pleasure being here.
So tell us about your film and the inspiration for you making that.
Well, this new film is on our medical system, and how it came to me was basically, I started to ask the question as with others that where exactly are we in our medical system? We have this belief, and this I'll reach out to your listeners as well, and to see if some of them were like me, where I'm thinking here we are at the time was 2017 when I started the film, that I thought that there was, you know, cures for, you know, for some cancers, Parkinson's, ALS, maybe effective treatment. You know, I just thought that we had advanced that far because we continue to hear that, you know, donate now, a breakthrough cures around the corner, things like that. But as I started to speak to people, I started to learn that we don't have cures for most cancers or Parkinson's or ALS, Alzheimer's. We don't have effective treatments, and we don't even understand the basic mechanisms of them. And so I started to ask, why is this, and why do we believe that there are? So the film delves into exactly what's happening with biomedical research in Canada.
And your documentaries have always exposed truths that have been shocking to the public, involving facts that are so contrary to what they've been led to believe by large organizations, and in this case, our government. Can you tell our listeners some of the information you uncovered in your research for this documentary?
Yeah, so what's happened is that once I started to try to understand why don't we actually have cures, why don't we have effective treatments, and why do we believe that there are, well, going on to the latter question first, why do we believe there are? Well, that's because our government and charities continue to tell us that there are breakthroughs and things like that. And when we hear about this and we see this in the news, what they don't tell us, well, they do tell us that sometimes that this has all been done in mice or dogs or rats or something, but it never correlates to humans. And when it gets to the human stage, it fails. So we don't really hear about the failures, and there's a lot of them. Approximately 95%. So this is exactly what I have learned, is that when we start looking at the biomedical research in Canada and all the money that our tax dollars and our charitable money is going to, which half of it for the government in biomedical research is animal testing, and a large portion of it for charities is also animal testing, but the reason why we don't have cures and effective treatments is vast, but predominantly is that we have a 95% failure rate when it comes to testing in animals for drugs to try to get them to the public. They fail at the human clinical stage. So you have a 95% failure rate that has always been there. So this is why we're not getting anywhere. And the reason why the failure rate is so high is because animals, chimps, dogs, pigs, rats, mice, they're so vastly different than us that we can't correlate that information to humans. So this is why we're now starting to move into alternatives and innovations that actually study human biology through blood or cells, skin tissue, things like that, which is more predictive and accurate because we're actually looking at humans. But we're so far behind that we're still investing too heavily in predominantly all in animal testing. With the fact there of all the failures, we still can't, we're still not transitioning fast enough, and we're going to be in the same position in about 30 years. Because what we have, Jen, is essentially medical alchemy. So what alchemy is the predecessor to chemistry, where they tried to turn base metals into gold. And they would tweak it and tweak it for decades, but it wasn't working. That's what we're doing with animals. We're trying to turn this information from animals, rats, dogs, all of that, to human diseases, and it's just not correlating because they're so different.
Well, the focus of your documentary is to expose this utter uselessness of the current state of animal testing, and I think taxpayers would be outraged to know this. But on another topic of injustice, and given that Animal Voices is a show about animals, can you tell us what species of animals are currently being tested on in Canada and around the world for medical research, and what's being done to them? Most people don't know these things.
Almost every animal you can think of, rats, mice, guinea pig, cat, dogs, birds, fish, almost everything worldwide, and even in Canada, there are centers that you can order specific dogs, order specific mice. It's a huge billion-dollar business, so almost virtually any animal that you can think of is being used worldwide.
and what kinds of things are being done to them. I think when I mean, I know, but this is for our listeners. And when I tell people what's being done to animals and is legally allowed here in Canada, they don't believe me.
Well, there's two aspects to that, but the first thing that I want to say is that I didn't delve into that. My film doesn't talk about the cruelty or the moral aspects of this. I just focus on the facts and the statistics. But to answer your question, anything you can imagine is what they do to these animals, because not only are there not strong laws and regulations to protect them, there's no oversight. There's nobody there to really ensure that they're following procedures. And all you have to do is look at some undercover investigations and you'll see exactly what's happening. It's pretty sad.
Yes, and we have done a show on that. There was actually a CTV expose on an animal lab in Montreal where activists, as we speak, are outside the facility. Beagles are being tested on and horrific things are done to them. They're being forced to smoke cigarettes, 20 packs a day or something like that.
And let's not forget with that, sorry to cut you off, and you may have said that, I didn't want this to be forgotten, is that they were actually approved by CCAC. So the Canadian Council on Animal Care, they were already approved and that was happening. So that, I think, really answers your question.
Exactly. It's not illegal. They're not doing anything wrong. And I think if the public knew, they would be motivated to take some action. And now you've given them another reason to take some action, which is just the utter uselessness of this archaic way of trying to find cures for human diseases at our expense. This is taxpayer money, right?
No, taxpayer and donor money.
Right, donor money too.
Yes. Now, we have to be careful when we say utter uselessness with using animals. Animals in the past at some point have helped in understanding, I guess, some physiology, perhaps with some cures and maybe some treatments. So it hasn't been completely and utterly useless. But once again, if you look at it from a different point of view, let's look at polio. So there's always a really good example where people say, look, we needed animals and we have a polio vaccine. Well, as I did my research and started to speak to scientists, I found out that the polio vaccine was actually delayed because we were testing on animals and there were alternatives there. And I found out that that was true for other areas. So I'm not going to say that animals didn't help, but we also, a lot of things that came from animals, we could have had a lot sooner. Now, there's something else that we didn't talk about is how many cures and potential treatments are we actually losing? So let me explain how this kind of works, Jen, is that if you want to come out with if you want to produce a prescription drug, you have a whole bunch of compounds and you test them on animal cell lines. So whatever doesn't make it past that stage is gone. But those are animal cell lines, not human cell lines. So we don't know how many of those compounds would have actually been a potential cure or treatment for us. So those are just gone. So we don't know what we've lost there. The ones that do pass the animal cell line testing go to the animals, all the animals that we had talked about. And from that point, there is a roughly 90% failure rate. 90% will fail in animals. Once again, how many of that 90% would actually help humans? We don't know because we're not mice, rats, pigs, and all of those other things. So 90% of those compounds are they're gone. So whatever does pass at this point in animals then goes to human clinical trials. And what we do now know, and we've known for a little while, is that when they get to the human clinical trials, 95% fail. 95% fail. So when you think, when you ask Canadians, When your tax dollars are going to biomedical research into animal testing, or your donation dollars are going to animal testing, are you comfortable with a 95% failure rate? But it's not just 95%, because now the 5% that has passed in human clinical trials that go into the public, we also know that prescription drugs, as prescribed by doctors, are killing people, are killing Canadians, are putting Canadians in hospitals every year. They're making them sick. They either and sometimes the drugs are ineffective, or they have to take another drug to combat some of the side effects. This is 2019, and our prescription drugs are essentially poisoned, and we're losing potentially a lot of cures. So as you can see, the whole system is flawed. Plus, validation is another problem. So one of the scientists in my film has said that, so here they've created non-animal alternatives, and which are more predictive and more accurate, but the way the law structures is now they have to validate them against the animal model. And they're laughing. They're saying ours are more predictive and more accurate, and they want us to this and validate this against a system that we already know is broken. And that may actually make our results false when we already know that they're positive. So there's many mechanisms in the system that's actually broken.
Well, in your film, you interviewed scientific researchers, professors, politicians, doctors, and scientific advisors who are advocating for the abolishment of animal testing in these cases because animals lack predictive value for human drug and disease studies and testing, as you've just mentioned. And I know from speaking to some of the people in the medical community that are advocating for the end of this, that they face a lot of opposition in their field. And in speaking with them, what are the common arguments for animal testing that they are facing from their adversaries within the medical community, and how are they responding? I know you have close relationships with these people.
That's a really good question, because that question is very poignant today, not 10 years ago. And the reason why it is today is because the answers have changed. What you're talking about, scientists who are still promoting animal testing, is only because the alternatives aren't here yet. Because every scientist, doesn't matter how much they enjoyed, I wouldn't say enjoyed, but how much they were focused on animal testing, every scientist worldwide that I spoke to or interviewed conclusively agreed that in the future, and not near future because we're not transitioning fast enough, but in the future, we will not be using animals to understand human disease. So the question is, do we need animals today, as an example? That's a very explosive question, in the sense that are we ready to transition to alternatives and to innovations just yet? No, but that's because we haven't invested in those areas yet. And should we continue spending money in animal testing and with a 95% failure rate, or should we really just slow down animal testing and start investing that money into alternatives? So, yeah, to answer your question, today the scientists' argument is really we're just not ready to transition yet. And so everybody's waiting for more money to be invested, and we have more tools that are specific to human biology rather than animal testing. So that's really what the questions and answers are that I've been receiving.
That's interesting. So we live in a society that so eagerly embraces all other forms of technology, and I find it surprising that the current state of medical research is so archaic and that there's so much resistance from government, health organizations, medical professionals, and research scientists to embrace more effective technological advances in science. And so when we had Ray Greek here speaking at the University of BC, I attended a talk and spoke with him individually about this. He is an anesthesiologist from Los Angeles. He goes around the world giving talks about how we need to invest in these technologies that you spoke of. And when I asked him why he finds so much resistance within his medical community and from his colleagues, he mentioned human emotion being a reason for that. And when I asked him to elaborate, I was thinking he meant ego, and he did, actually. He said, you know, you've got people who have put all of what they have into their careers, and to admit that what they've been doing was wrong is difficult for them. And he also mentioned the financial aspect of how the current state of medical testing involves a lot of businesses that they're supporting. Do you have any comments on that from what you've heard from people that you've interviewed?
That's exactly correct. There's the two things. There's the personal aspect, which is the scientists themselves who only know animal testing, so that's what they support, that's all they know. That's what they've been told that we need to do to understand human disease, so that's what they focus on. And yeah, there's an ego thing because they've been getting grants to study this, so for them to admit that this isn't really working is not something that they're going to do. The other thing is the financial aspect of it. This is worth billions of dollars. There's a system already in place worldwide, even in Canada, where there's a lot of companies making a lot of money, and to move away to transition to alternatives means that they're going to be losing money and the system is going to have to change, and a lot of people and a lot of companies don't want that.
And, you know, you're speaking of grants a second ago, which reminded me of a part that I saw in your film where I learned that when people are applying for grants, if they are using new technologies, they're frequently being denied.
I'm so glad you brought that up. This is another problem within the system. So when you look at charities and you look at our government, what happens is when they hand out the money for grants, they have a group of scientists, a group of people who look at people who are applying, and they're all essentially testing on animals. This is because this you don't have very many people in the field of alternatives because it's still relatively new. And so they're making decisions that have to be based on animal testing. And so I've had scientists say that here I am moving into the future, moving towards precision medicine, but my grants are being denied because I don't have animals testing in my proposal. And then when I contacted the charities and the government, and they both agreed, oh, of course we should be moving towards the future, they didn't even know they were denying grants.
Wow.
Isn't that sad?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of your film, I was impressed to see that you have had interviewed the leader of the Green Party, Elizabeth May, in your documentary, and she mentioned that we need much better regulation of the pharmaceutical industry and better information on drug trials, as thousands of Canadians are dying from using pharmaceuticals as they were prescribed. And she goes on to say that Health Canada has been strangling the effect of what we did in the last parliament. And she's not the only person in your film who has stated that the state of our medical testing has been going downhill in recent years, and most people would probably be surprised to hear that. You would think as we go on in years, we're getting, you know, advancements in technology and we're getting better, but we're not. And so why do you think it is that our own government continues to invest in a system that has a 95% failure rate? And have you spoken to anybody from government about this and had any answers? Or even from, have you spoken to people from leading health organizations and charities about this?
No one from the government, Health Canada, CIHR, CCAC, not a single one of them wanted to give me an interview, and not a single charity wanted to give me an interview. So that was quite disappointing. The reason why they're stuck on this system, once again, it's a system in place, and you have to, I guess, understand that when the system is in place the way it is, they're bringing in, as an example, a president to look after this. Well, they're only going to bring in people who understand and can build that particular system. And once again, there isn't that many people in the alternative field because it's new to come along and say, this whole thing is broken. A lot of them know, well, we know that this isn't the best system. We don't have answers yet. We don't have the alternatives yet. But they're not investing in it because the system is already in place. And it's not a simple transaction to move an entire system over to a whole new system, as per se. But going back to Elizabeth May and how dangerous prescription drugs are, there is something that I want to mention as why they're also really dangerous is because they were passed in animals, as I had mentioned. But what a lot of people don't know, and this was absolutely frightening to me because I didn't know this either. As I'm speaking to these scientists, they said, Gary, how the system works is before the animal testing goes to human clinical trials, they have to pass in animal testing. So one would believe that if you're testing a drug, you imagine that you need to test on 10 animals. So they'll take 10 rabbits as an example. And what you would think that they would have to pass in those 10 rabbits. What you don't know is that they could fail in all 10 rabbits, and the scientists can bring in 10 new rabbits or 10 new mice. They can change from female to male. They can change the dosage. They can do whatever it wants to whatever they want to finally get that positive result so it can go to human clinical trials. It is absolutely frightening. There's a drug could have failed in 1,000 animals. I mean, that's a gross exaggeration, but what I'm saying is it could have failed in so many animals, and we won't even know about it. All we're going to hear is that, oh, they passed in animals. So the things that the drugs are really passing in animals, we really don't know if they've passed in animals or not, and we certainly know that they're very dangerous to humans regardless, because what happens in an animal does not correlate with the human.
Well, actually, that reminds me of when Dr. Greek was here last year. He gave us an example of... I said to him, you know, as an animal rights activist, I'm engaging with the public on this issue, and it's hard for me to describe to people that may not have a scientific background on why this animal testing that's currently being used is not effective. He gave me a really great example. So human zygomatic twins can come down with different diseases, and even if they did get the same disease, they would have different reactions to the same drug because of incredibly small differences that occurred in each of their bodies after the zygote splits, and therefore he said, it's, quote, crazy to think we can get a similar drug reaction in a different species.
Isn't that powerful?
Yeah.
That was one of the things that really caught me, because when I do my films, every once in a while, there'll be a certain piece of information that just sheds light on the whole thing.
Yeah.
So when you look at identical twins, and you can't tell what one twin is doing by just looking at that one, how are you, like, like Dr. Greet said, how do you even remotely think it's possible to get any information from a mouse to a human when one twin can't tell you what the other twin is doing?
Mm-hmm. And so in your research, you've obviously spoken with a lot of people who are looking into the alternatives to what is currently being used to find cures for human diseases. Can you give us some examples of what alternatives could be used and if we did invest our tax dollars into this technology?
Okay, well, first of all, we don't have a choice but to invest in this technology because we know that animal biology does not work. So that's an automatic that we have to transition, and it's quite disappointing that we didn't start a heavy transition at least 10 years ago. But to some of the one of the neatest things that I've seen is called organ on a chip, which will be heart on a chip, lung on a chip. And what they do, and this is going into now where everybody wants to go in the future, which is precision medicine, individualized medicine. So as we know right now, how you get a drug is because it was tested on animals and a bunch of people, and then to you. You have nothing you have no relations to these people. So it's not even remotely close. But what's happening now is organ on a chip will take your cells, your blood cells, and they'll put them through this chip, and it'll mimic your system. And then they'll test the compounds on your own cells to see whether or not a drug will be beneficial or harmful to you. And then a drug will be created, and it won't go through an organ on a chip. Then it'll go through another process of computer modeling, and then probably 3D printing for perhaps heart tissue to be tested on. So there's all these different areas that your cells, your skin tissue could be tested on, or skin tissue could be created from your own cells, and to create a drug that's specifically for you. There's over 7 billion people on the planet, and that drug would not be good for anyone but just you, and it will work because it was tested. So organs on a chip, computer modeling, 3D printing, things like that are here right now, and they're incredible.
Well, this reminds me of when my dear uncle was dying of cancer, and things weren't looking good, and they were trying new experimental drugs on him, and this would have been a case where rather than just randomly trying drugs, they would have been able to test it in a lab and know without having him suffer those side effects.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that many of our listeners today have likely donated to health organizations who do research for cures to common diseases, and I know many people who do the annual Ride to Conquer Cancer and other sporting events where participants are required to fundraise for their entry in the races, and, you know, when I hear about them proudly exclaiming that they're doing this, I mean, it's awkward. I want to bite my tongue, but I also don't. I mean, you're affecting someone's ego when you let them know, actually, that's not a good thing to do, and you have to bring it up quite delicately. So what can our listeners do to take action on this issue if they are, you know, donating or fundraising for these organizations now that they've learned that their money is being used to support outdated research methods?
Well, you brought up something really interesting that I didn't even think about, is if you do have a group of people for the Ride to Cure Cancer or something like that, what they can do is they can demand to say that we don't want our money going towards animal testing. What the public has to do is one of two things. Well, they have to do two things, essentially. They have to approach the politicians and demand that government make a transition and a transparent, a strong transition away from animal testing towards innovations. And that's their tax dollars. So they have to talk to their politicians about that. And then when it comes to charities, this is even easier because they could just simply call up their charity and say, I still want to donate, but you need to put an option on your website, make a visible option to the public to know that their money can go to alternatives and innovations that aren't animal testing. And that would be the simplest thing when it comes to charities. I can imagine thousands of people across Canada letting charities know, put a button there that has an option, and you'll start seeing that happen. And so we can move charities probably faster than government in this regard, but those are the two things that people can do.
Well, perhaps I'm being cynical, but I wouldn't believe that they would put that money toward new technologies.
Well, that's where the transparency comes in. This is where you have to demand government and charities to be transparent and to say, because the when you look at the organizations, the charitable organizations, they do put out where the money is going to, kind of. Sometimes they're very specific and sometimes it's a bit vague, but if there's a big push and there's transparency required, then hopefully we can now start seeing. And I think that, and it's kind of like veganism. You know, you're seeing a big boom towards veganism. I think that we're going to see a big boom towards transition. And I think once everybody starts to like, get on the bandwagon, I don't like to say it that way, but that's how government and charities kind of work. When they see groups of people moving towards one way, they jump on that bandwagon. And I can see charities at some point, with a push from the public, being proud to announce that they're heavily investing in alternatives. The minute that they find that that's where the public wants to go, well, that's exactly what they're going to do.
I agree. And, you know, contacting elected officials and even the people who you contacted that didn't get back to you. Imagine if the public also was contacting them, these charitable organizations.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I was disappointed because when I contacted the Canadian Cancer Society, I went to their website. I donated to see what the process was like. There was no options. And so when I contacted, well, actually, first I contacted them and they said, yes, we have options. So I went through the process, but there was no options to donate to non-animal testing. So I contacted them and they said, oh, we can do it, but you have to ask. I said, why do we have to ask? You know, most of your donations are probably coming from online, and people don't even know about alternatives. So if you're here to educate people and move us into the right direction, which is 100% precision medicine, why are you not putting this on? And they just had no interest. They're just stuck in this old paradigm. And, yeah, things need to change. And I would even go so far as to question the presidents of these charitable organizations to see whether or not they have the experience to move the organization into a new area, or if they're just stuck on what's there.
Yeah, I am cynical. I really don't even believe that if you phoned and you verbally requested that would make any difference at all. I think that's a bunch of BS personally. But anyway, we need filmmakers like you to get the truth out. This is where it comes, is educating the public. And your film is very well done and extremely convincing, especially because the people that are saying that this is not working are scientists and researchers themselves.
Well, I'll tell you something. It's just like I said, I didn't want to touch the ethical or moral question because it is circular. When you think about, you know, when people talk about, you know, the ethical procedures or whatever, or non-ethical procedures being done on animals, the moral question then becomes, so a parent, as an example, is kind of this in a difficult position because they've been indoctrinated to believe that if your child has cancer, there's only one way to cure it, and that's to test on mice. So to them, it's morally fine to do that as long as, you know, the mouse is looked after. You know, there's rules and regulations, so they're not harmed for unnecessarily, things like that. But what they don't realize is that it's actually immoral to continue testing on animals, knowing that there's a 95% failure rate, knowing that if a child does get cancer, they will probably pass away from cancer, because even with children today, which was shocking once again to me, was that children are receiving, you know, chemotherapy and radiation, losing their hair, throwing up in the bag, just as they were 20 years ago, and this is 2019, and like I said, I didn't know we were so far behind. I thought we were further advanced. All these pictures that I was seeing of these poor children, I thought this was 20 years ago. This is this year.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is a moral dilemma here, and that's the fact that children are going to die needlessly because we're testing on animals.
Mm-hmm. So when can we expect to see your film released to the public, if you in fact know that, and can you tell people where they can find more information in the meantime if they want to do some more research?
I don't know the date, the release date yet, because we don't know how we're going to release it, and we don't really have it. We're not quite ready. We haven't even quite finished the film, so there's nowhere for people to go just yet. We're still building the website and finalizing the film, but I'm hoping next year it'll be released. But we'll see the types of venues that we use.
And it's called Medical Illusion. If you want to keep your eyes out for that, everybody. And
Healthcare in Crisis.
Healthcare in Crisis, yes. And in the meantime, if people, like activists, would like to learn more about how they can learn to be better advocates in this case, have you got any great resources, websites, books that you've come across?
I think, honestly, just being people just opening up their minds to the fact that animal testing doesn't work, and then they start talking to other people. It's kind of difficult right now without them having the tool. That's why I like documentaries, because then you can actually show the statistics and show the facts. So for me, once the film comes out, that's my tool when people talk to me or they say, you know, what can I do? I say, watch the film and grab what resonates with you. And then I can give them something that they can talk about. So that's my avenue for tools and for myself and for others. And right now, if people without the film, people can just get online and just start actually doing their research as to non-animal testing methods and what's really happening.
Yes, I would recommend finding Dr. Ray Greek online. We've had him on the Animal Voices show, so you can search Ray Greek on animalvoices.org. And also have a look at Sharu Chandrasekara, who is has started a research lab at the University of Windsor that is going to be all new technologies and still raising funds for that. So if you'd like to donate, that would be the best place that you could donate. You can just Google the new lab at the University of Windsor, and that will all come up. And we'll post a link on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, as well. Gary Charbonneau, thank you so much for being on the show again today. I look forward to the release of your film.
Jen, thank you so much, and thanks to all your listeners, and I'll wish you a good day.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And thanks to Jen for presenting those interviews and that show today. I look forward to re-listening to it myself, which you can do online. I'll get to that soon. So please join us for next week's show on Friday, August the 9th. I just returned back from the National Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C., and next week we'll hear some of the highlights from this year's conference. We here at the Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. Our past shows can be listened to on our website, animalvoices.org. All of our past podcasts are also available on iTunes and Google Play. Join our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and we are now on Instagram as well at Animal Voices Vancouver. This next week, I will be particularly posting on Facebook throughout the week to share photos and videos and from the experiences that I had at the recent AR conference and also from my visit to the beautiful Popular Spring Sanctuary, which is located in Poolesville, Maryland. Lots of amazing animals who I met there and reacquainted with there. So I'm also putting out a call for volunteers for the Animal Voices Radio Show. We are an all-volunteer-run collective and are looking for good people who would like to be part of the show by using your skills in the most suitable roles. We are especially looking for people who are web and social media savvy to work behind the scenes, as well as volunteers who have knowledge of animal advocacy issues or are willing to learn to co-host with us on the air. If you have audio and or video editing experience or have the aptitude to learn and build your expertise in these areas, we could really use your help. Availability during our live Friday afternoon shows is not necessary to fill in many of the above roles. Please send us an email at info@animalvoices.org with some information about your background and interests, and we will get back to you. To close the show, we'll be playing the song Hey by the Pixies. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.